continue with Shar Yichud Ve'amuna. We are on the top of page 309, 310. In the Hebrew, it's the line that starts Zman. It's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 lines from the top at the dot, Vihine. And in the English, it's in the middle of the paragraph. The words are going to apply solely to the possession of dimensions. All these dimensions have no relation. It's five lines down in the first paragraph. We are talking about now our perspective of creation. Up until chapters 1 through 6, we were talking about Hashem's perspective of creation. And the we said that the Baruch Shem Kivod Malchuso L'Olam Voed is a parallel to Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. The and gave various ways of showing that and proving that. And the reason for this is that the main thing in Baruch Shem Kivod Malchuso L'Olam Voed is the word Malchuso, which implies that you have a kingdom, and a kingdom implies subjects which are separate from the king, separate entities. We say that this idea of separation is responsible for time and place, because division and absolute separation is divided up into parts. Place is divided into northeast, southwest, up and down, and time is divided into past, present, and future. Okay, you must have heard the line that the past, present, and future walked into a bar. It was really tense. Anyway, da-dum bump. Zehine, kol b'chines elu. All of these things, these different directions and separations, Elohim Shaychus B'Mi'ezah Kedusha Al Yoina, is not relevant to the other attributes. Like he's going to say over here, you have, for example, Hashem Melech, Hashem Melech, Hashem Yimloch. Hashem was king, Hashem is king, Hashem will be king. There is nowhere does it say any place Hashem Chosid, Hashem Chesed, Hashem Yachseid. You know, Hashem was kind, Hashem is kind, because there's no division. It's just Hashem's kindness. It's constant. There's no difference what was, what is, what it will be. But with Malchusai establishes and makes it an ability for something to exist as an entity that perceives its own existence, limited by time and place, and the godliness is therefore also limited by time and place. With the Malchus, you could say Hashem is king, to the highest of levels, to the lowest of levels, the king of Dalas Sitchin in all the directions, the king is Miazman, Hashem Melech, Hashem Melech, Hashem Yimlech, and so to in time, in past, present, and future. Nimsa Shechayas Hamakim, Vechayas Hazman, Hisavusamai, and Liyek Shekim, Kolzman Kiyum, Amahu, Mamidos, and Malchus, Yuzbarach. So it comes out from all this that the existence, the life which we find in time and place, and it's being brought into existence as a something from nothing, and it's being sustained, as long as it's being sustained, is an expression of Malchus, which Malchus is in the ineffable names of Hashem is Adonai. Last chapters, we are talking about the relationship between Yud-Kei, Vav-Kei, Havaya, and Elohim. So this time, now what he's talking about is the relationship between Havaya and Adonai. From Elohim, you're not going to get something outside of Hashem. The containment process will continue ad infinitum, for infinity. It'll just keep on containing and containing and containing and containing, and you'll never get here. That's what it's going to be. You need the name of Adonai, because what does Adonai do? As we talked about last week, is the establishment of Hashem as king establishes a separation. That's what you need to have this world exist the way it does, is we have to honestly look at ourselves and say, we are separate from Hashem. Now, it's true. I can convince myself and I can convince you, as we've been doing for the last six chapters, that really in all in actuality there is nothing besides Hashem. And what is made up in the world is actually Hashem, and there's the only thing that exists is Hashem. Okay? And we understand that, and really in truth, that's easier to understand. That's easier to understand than how we do exist. But without having to go into explanations, no one in this world of 7 billion people is gonna say, I don't exist. Because just empirical evidence is that we do exist. And how is it that we do exist? Is because there's this whole separate system which is governed, you should pardon the expression, by Shem Adonai. Hashem is Lord, Hashem is King. Okay?
Okay. Can I?
Yes.
When you say Elohim would just keep containing, is it a compounded containment or just
the creation process would just go on forever and you wouldn't get a creation if it was just Elohim. Because there is a direct relation. There is a direct relationship between Hashem and Elohim.
Okay.
What does Elohim do? Elohim limits Havaya.
Yes.
And what happens then is that level now that's been limited now becomes the Havaya for the next level, which is limited by the next level of Elohim, which that third level now becomes the Chayas, which becomes the Havaya for the next level, which is limited by the fourth level of Elohim. And that fourth level of Elohim now becomes the fifth level of Havaya, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Okay, I guess I'm probably confusing two issues here, but it seems to me that everything around us is a concealment.
Totally.
Okay.
That's because of Adonai, not because of Elohim.
Okay.
With Elohim, you get a statement like, Ein etzem master al atzmai, or milam al atzmai. Something doesn't cover over itself.
Yeah.
And therefore, with the creation process, as far as Hashem is concerned, because it's made out of Hashem, it doesn't cover over himself. So everything still remains within its integrity of being part and parcel of Hashem.
So in one aspect, in this case, you could say Adonai is a revelation.
Yes, what it does is it reveals us.
Yeah.
Correct.
Okay.
It is directly because of our relationship with Adonai that we exist as unique entities.
Okay.
Or at least we think we do, but that's what we're talking about now.
Right.
We're talking about our perspective now in creation in this chapter, in these chapters.
But that's part of, could you say that's all in part of the intent?
That's the total kavana.
Yeah, absolutely.
Hashem made a world in order that we should have three dimensions and stoop a neshama into it and then say, okay, go find your way back.
I mean, so the awareness of this, the altar of wants us to have an awareness of this.
Yep.
Why?
Lasis lo yisbarach dira betachtonim, in order to make a dwelling place for Hashem.
Yeah. How could you find your way back
unless you know that you're supposed to be finding your way back?
Exactly.
There's a lot of lost people out there. Lefisha midas malchusa yisbarach miyuchedis b'malchusa v'atzmusa yisbarach v'tachlis hayichud k'moshi yisbar. Because just like it is with all other attributes of Hashem that we say about the midas of Atzilus. The attributes that are in Atzilus, it says in the Pasuk Eliyahu, what is that? It's not Pasuk Eliyahu. Ihu v'chayehu chad, ihu v'garmehu chad, heina kelim, that Hashem and his life is one, Hashem and his effects, meaning the kelim, the vehicles, the vessels for conveying godliness, are one.
Right.
So as it just so happens, Malchus of Atzilus happens to be part of Atzilus, and fits the definition thereof of being totally and completely united with Hashem. It's just that the function of Malchus is to relate the previous nine spheres to the next world. That's what the purpose of Malchus is. That's the purpose of Adonai.
Yeah.
Okay, it says, for example, that Malchus leis le megarme klum. The sphere of Malchus has nothing of its own. There's something we talk about in the Rosh Hashanah Maimorim that's referred to as the Binyan HaMalchus, which is the building of Malchus. That the Chachma, Malchus of Chachma, meaning this, that attribute of Chachma that makes it relevant to Bina, which we call Malchus, becomes Chachma of Malchus. Malchus of Bina, which that's that aspect of Bina, which relates to Das, now becomes Bina of Malchus. And all the way down till you get to Yesod of Malchus. And then all together, those nine produce what would be called Malchus of Malchus, which that's the sphere of Malchus itself. And the purpose of Malchus, is to be able to relate to the next world. Yeah. As it says that the Malchus of the higher world becomes the Keser, meaning the top of the lower world.
Yeah.
Hence the idea, the Seder Histalshulus, the reason, the word that we use to describe the creation is a chain reaction, that the bottom of the top link is intertwined with the top of the bottom link. But it's even more than that, because here the
Enetzilus is the very top link.
And in the world process, yes. Here,
so there's nothing above Keser
not in relationship to that we would refer to as worlds.
Right.
There's a whole infinity above Atzilus, yes.
Okay,
but it's not worlds. Okay, that's not creation process anymore. That's sort of like, it's there. Okay? Here the difference is with this is not that the top link, the bottom of the top link is intertwined with the top of the bottom link. Here, Malchus of Atzilus becomes Keser of Bria, that the bottom of the top link is the next link. Of the bottom link.
Yeah.
It's the same thing. The difference is what is it doing?
Viewpoint.
As Malchus is receiving from the previous nine spheres, so we call it Malchus of Atzilus. As it's being Mashpia, as it's giving influence down to the lower level, so now we're going to call it Keser of Bria. Okay, and the reason why, and all of these things have different names depending on which book you're looking in. Malchus is called Malchus in the Kabbalah. It's called Shekhinah in the Zohar. It's called Adonai, in as far as the names are concerned, it's called Matronisa, which means the matron. It's called Ematata, the lower mother. All these names are referring to the same thing. And it's basically, they're all synonymous, because they're called those different names because they're all basically doing the same function of bringing godliness down.
What do the Litvaks call it?
Are they feminine
because of giving birth, yes. Yes, it is feminine. I don't know.
I know that it was a rhetorical question.
Maybe they call it Hamakim, you know,
No.
I'm sorry, I'm not up on Ms. Nagdish jargon.
It'll come to me.
Okay. Yeah. Call me at 3 a.m.
Meaning the feminine in that is one entity that leads to another entity.
Correct. Giving birth, motherhood. Put them all together, they spell. Anyway. Therefore, since it is that the source of this world is totally and completely nullified to the essence of Hashem, as is true with all the other attributes, so anything that attribute is going to do, like for example, create time and place, is also going to be totally and completely nullified in their existence. Mamish legavi mahusavas mosi yizborach kibitul haor b'shemesh. the same way exactly as the light of the sun as it is in the sun. Meaning to say, we do have an existence. If you pinch me, it will hurt. Not you, but it'll hurt me. It depends on what part.
It's going to say, you know. It's going to say... That's good. Yeah, how long you wait on that, right?
I'm tough, you know. Yeah. So I'm going to let you know if you know yeah. pinch me too hard, it's going to hurt you. So exactly. So I have a metzius. No one can tell me I don't exist. Yet, my existence, I understand, has to be totally and completely dependent on what's referred to in the Kabbalah jargon as Kayach HaPoel B'Nifal. There has to be a constant revelation of godliness keeping me in existence. We'll go back to our paradigm of the flying rock. Mm. Back in chapter 1, we gave the analogy of a rock that's flying. Okay? That as long as, how long will a rock stay up in the air?
As long as there's energy.
You pick it up, you throw it, it'll stay up there as long as the energy is in the rock, keeping it stronger, overcoming the forces of gravity which are going to pull it down. Not if we're going to go into the idea that there's gravity or not, that's not okay. So now the question then is, you were raised in a cave, and one day you find the opening of the cave, and just as you walk outside of the cave, you see a rock whizzing by. And so what do you think?
A wife threw a rock at me.
You think that rocks fly.
I'm going back in the cave.
I'm going back in the cave, yes. Hey, man, I got rocks flying out here. I ain't going out there.
Exactly.
You think that rocks fly. Mm. So the question then now becomes, is that rock, when it's up in the air, and we answered this question one way in chapter 1, and now we're going to answer it another way in chapter 7, because it's two different focuses. Mm. Is that rock... Since what do rocks do? Rocks sit. Yes. And rocks just keep sitting, and they will always keep sitting.
And they do that very well.
And this rock, which is up in the air, is actually just sitting on a force.
Yes, it is.
That's one way of looking at it. Or would you say that the energy which has been instilled into this rock has changed the nature of the rock such that now it's moving? And when that energy is used up, it'll revert back to its original nature of sitting. Which is the correct paradigm depends on whose perspective we're talking about. Because we're talking about the ayin. Because what did Hashem have to do? Hashem has to instill, Hashem takes the ayin, the nothing, and puts energy into it and keeps it, makes it a yesh, makes it a something. So now that we have this something, is this something... A nothing that's sitting on the force, keeping it as something, but essentially it's nothing? Or do we say that the energy which is enclosed now in the nothing is actually changed its nature and now it is a something? The answer is yes. If you're looking at chapters 1 through 6, that the only thing that exists is Hashem, so then the ayin stays an ayin. Mm. And it just so happens that Hashem is putting energy into it to keep the ayin, which is an ayin, to make it look like a yesh. But essentially, it is still an ayin. Its nature didn't change, just like the rock. The nature of the rock did not change. It's still sitting, but now it's sitting on a force propelling it. So too also, the ayin, the nothing, is still a nothing. But it's sitting on a force propelling it into existence as a something. That's the way Hashem looks at it. That's chapter 1 through 6. Now, what do we have? The way we're looking at it now because of Adonai is that there's godliness and it's enclosed into the nothing. There's this energy which is instilled into the nothing that changes the nature of nothing and makes it into a something. And how long will it stay as something? As long as the energy is changing its nature to be a something, it will stay as something. And as soon as that energy is gone, it'll revert back to the nothing that was propping it up. And that example we had before with the strong east wind, which was blowing by the splitting of the sea. Because what happened there with the miracle, the splitting of the sea, is that the nature of water changed from being fluid to standing erect in a polarized fashion. And as soon as the energy, as soon as the wind stopped blowing, it reverted back to flowing.
Couldn't you say it was prevented from flowing rather than it itself?
No, that was true when Joshua split the sea, split the Jordan. When Joshua split the Jordan, he didn't really split the Jordan. He put some sort of energy force field dam in the Jordan, and the water just kept on flowing, but it only got to a certain point, and it just kept on piling up and up and up and up and up. But everybody looked at this stuff and said, oh, that's water, and it's flowing, but it's not flowing past this point.
It couldn't have flown that far up, because it's the Jordan. I mean, it's a little puddle,
basically. Yeah, back then, I think it was bitter, because it said that it was actually 300 miles high by the time all the Jews got across. Yeah, I know. The Jordan now is nothing more. You could spit across the Jordan now, but, you know, when it was back then. But coming for to carry me home and everything. No, but you're true, because by Malachim already, when Elisha told the general to go take a dip in the mikveh, he says, well, we got the Euphrates. What do we need your creek for?
Right, exactly.
You know, so it was never an impressive river.
Yeah.
So, but with the Kriyas Yamsuf, the nature of water all over the world changed so that water, even water in a glass, if you were holding a glass during those 12 hours that it took for the Bnei Yisrael to cross the sea, the water would be split inside the glass.
So which side did you drink from?
Whichever side you were more thirsty from.
I guess.
But that would really put a damper in it. Was the glass half full or half empty?
Exactly.
Because the middle half would be the empty part.
Actually, you would drink on the bottom because it was an east-west split.
What if you turned the glass sideways?
It's still east-west, rotated.
Anyway, so... And that is because Zehu, that's our existence. Zehu Shilov Shem Adnus B'Shem Avaya. He now introduces a new concept over here, that you have a partnership. The word Shilov, the word Shlav, means like a rung of a ladder. And what we have over here are different rungs of godliness. That when the creation is, we're talking about Hashem's perspective, so you have an inter-partnership, an inter-dispersal of the name of Havaya into Adnai. And what you come up with is a name which is not a name. You get, it would be spelled Yud Aleph Hey Nun Vav Dalid Hey Yud. Is that what I did over there?
Okay. Good luck with that, yeah.
Okay, you can't pronounce it, it's not nothing. What it is it's the interchange of the two functions. Mm-hmm. If you're going to say a name, for all intents and purposes, could be called an algorithm. Okay, you put a certain algorithms, you put a certain number at the beginning, you throw it through the machinery, and it comes out the other end totally different. Okay, so a name is the same thing. Even with us, there are people who call you Kiva, there are people who call you Mr. Wit, there are people who call you Honey, there are people who call you Dad, there are people who call you Zeta.
Yeah,
all of these are different functions of the same thing.
Correct.
If we can somehow now, the idea would be is to pair two of those together.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? I don't know if there would be any in the world who would call you, say, Mr. Wit Honey.
That would be kind of. I sure hope not.
That would be a real strange one.
I don't want to know.
Yes, indeed. Okay. If somebody called you Dad Zeta, that would be, you know, never talking about.
I don't want to know about that either.
Talking about Jerry Lewis and I'm my own grandpa, you know, that song.
Exactly,
anyway,
yeah.
So So, but we can't do it because it doesn't work so much for us because each one is its own algorithm, its own thing.
Yes.
But you do have concept, you do have an algebra, you have multiple algorithms working together simultaneously with numbers, and it works. Because as soon as you get done passing it through this function, right. It immediately goes into a second function.
Right.
Second tier of functions. That's how we get things like secants, for example, if you remember your trig from way back when. So here, with the name of Adonai fitting into, Adonai has a certain, has a certain function, a certain purpose. It's what's defined, it's the providing life force to the world. And then you have Adonai, which is creating a metzias, a something that recognizes its own existence. You put the two together in a perfect unity, da-da-da-da, and what do we get? Well, it depends how you put it together, because there's a way you can put it together where Adonai is the main thing, which is what's really enlivening our world. The way he's talking about it over here is the main thing is the godliness, the spirituality, which, when you analyze it, the main thing that's in this world is not the physical world. The main thing is the spirituality in the world. The neshamas that we have is the reason why there's a world. God did not create the world for bodies, not even Jewish bodies. Since it was that Hashem wanted there to be Jewish souls, and he wanted the Jewish souls to be able to go and do Torah and mitzvahs, and in order to be able for the world, for these souls to do Torah and mitzvahs, so ancillary to the fact you have to have a body, so we have to have bodies and we schlep them wherever we go.
Right.
So the main thing is the neshama. So that's going to be the yud, with the aleph, with the nun, with the hay, etc. Later on, he's going to say, but when you're looking at the metzias of world as it is a metzias, because when I look at the world, I'm not seeing souls.
Not seeing so many.
I don't see any spirituality when I'm walking down the street driving my car.
Right.
I see physical world. That is because at that point, the system is not Havaya Adonai, it's Adonai Havaya. And there you would write it, Aleph Yud, Nun Hey, Dalet Vav, Yud Hey. Exactly backwards to it, because there the primary emphasis is body. Because that's how I exist. Is my primary, if my primary existence was soul, if my primary existence was soul, then I wouldn't care about the physical world.
Right.
And indeed, you have tzaddikim that they don't care about the physical world. They have problems living in this world. They don't like to eat or sleep. They just don't relate to the physical world. Okay, because by them, the primary thing is the godliness, the spirituality. Okay? Okay. So that's what it means, the shiluv. This intertwining.
Mm-hmm.
How does he translate it in English? The intercalation or something like that?
Mm-hmm. I missed it. I'll find it here in a second.
Yeah, the intertwining. Okay, simple. Shiluv, Shem Adnus, Shem Havaya. Kishem Havaya Meir Shehu L'Maylam Min Hazman. The name Havaya is higher than time. That is Haya Hoyva V'Yiyah B'Rega Echad. That at any moment, every moment, it was, is, and will be simultaneously. K'moshe Gozav Arayim Mehem the Parshas Pinchas. The Kain like Milam we call Makaim, and so too also higher than all place. Kihu Mahavitamit is called Buchinus Hamakam Kulul Melamila Adlamata Dalatichin, because Hashem brings place into existence in a single instance. He doesn't build from the bottom up or from the top down or start from the left or the right or the back or the front. Place comes into existence simultaneously. Even though Hashem is higher than time and place, but Hashem can make himself exist in time and place. That's what the name Adonai does. That's the function of Adonai, is to take this godliness, which is higher than time and place, and have it function within the limitations, yeah, the parameters of time and place.
Right. Hence everything you see.
Yep. The higher Shem is Yachad B'midos Malchusoy. That means to say, how does that happen? That the name Havaya unites with the attribute of Hashem's Malchus. Mm-hmm. So the two together form one entity. Mm-hmm. And so that time and place can suddenly come into existence. And he gives us a nice fancy title. This is the lower unity, which the term lower unity means how we, terrestrials, perceive creation. Yichud Eloh is how Hashem perceives creation, that only Hashem exists. And Yichud Tata is our perception, how we exist. Which one is true? They are both true.
Just yes.
The question is who's from whose perspective? So from Hashem's right. perception, right. Hashem's perception is true. And from our perception is true. What he's going to be talking about in chapters 10, 11, and 12 is how do we fit the two together?
Right.
How do we fit both perceptions together as one entity?
How do you put the square peg in the round hole and they both fit?
Perfectly.
Yes.
No, it's even better than that. It's how do you put a square peg into a round peg?
Yes, exactly.
So.
Exactly.
Indeed. I got to pour myself a drink of water. Hold on just a sec. So, continuing.
When you say intertwine, it's like, you know, this duality, this tandem, this...
Right. You always talk the about infinite this. Contained within the finite, yes.
Right. So, this is a theme, you know. And it's all unified because we say Hashem Achad and all that.
Correct.
And the purpose of dividing it up and qualifying it is so that we can... I mean, Hashem doesn't need all this learning. We need all this learning.
This is all for us.
Hints.
Exactly. It's all for us.
Little hints, little specks.
Right.
And you can sort of hang on this little speck. Right. But, and I've been doing it for a long, many years.
Right.
And yet, there's a frustration I always feel with it for some reason.
You're frustrated because you haven't hit infinity yet?
No, because I really don't, it's really so incomprehensible.
Yes, indeed. Welcome to the world. Thank you very much. And he does say later on that a person who says, I don't understand Hashem, is the same thing as saying, I don't know what calculus tastes like, because it's beyond that.
I mean, you can grapple.
Yes, you could. You can try and taste calculus all you like. And you might even develop a geschmack for learning calculus.
The fascinating thing is that, like about Sadiqim, that somehow there are people who are given a brain.
They're given those insights. It's not the brain, it's the neshama, yes.
And the brain, too.
Trust me, they don't understand either.
They're not in control. You have to ask a tzaddik, what's it like to be a tzaddik? He'll say, I couldn't tell you because I don't know what to tell you about.
Like when the Rebbe would look at people and he would see their neshama. That's what I always thought was going on.
Sure.
Yeah, okay, good, I mean, yeah.
And you wonder, how many people... have that, and how many other people
does it make a difference?
Huh?
Does it matter?
I remember, the Buckham would hide. They didn't want the rabbit to see them because they didn't want the rabbit to see
their averas, right? So yeah.
So where are you gonna hide?
Well, you can see your averas. You can see where you're hiding.
Where are you gonna hide?
He knows if you've been dead or good. Yes.
Yeah, where are you gonna hide?
Anyway, let's continue.
Yeah.
So even though Hashem is higher than time and place, he's found in time and place. Mm. Okay? Yes. The finite contains the infinite. Mm. And we have no problem with that, because how many fractions are there between 0 and 1?
Infinite.
Which is this partnership of Yud Kei Vav Kei together into Aleph Dalet Nun Yud. Baruch Hu. Dahainer, that means to say, Shemahusvas Musa Yisbarach Hanikri B'Shem Ein Sof Baruch Hu, that this name of Hashem, this essence of Hashem that we call infinite, for lack of any other name, and this infiniteness of Hashem fills time and place, mamish, absolutely. Time as a living organism, every single quantum unit of time is totally and completely permeated and enveloped by Elokus, keeping it existing as
sure
that measure of time.
As a, yeah.
And same thing with place. Every single, what do you call it, quark or energy pod.
Yeah, whatever, yeah.
Has the godliness that's keeping it in existence,
right,
and enlivening it. Kiba shemayim ma'al, v'al ha'ariz, v'al ha'sitchin, ha'kol mole, ma'or, ein sov baruch hu b'shav ha'mamash. Because the highest of heavens and the four directions of the world, the infiniteness of Shem is equally found in all aspects of the creation. We see what happens. You take an electron away from a hydrogen molecule,
and they get very upset.
You get Nagasaki and Hiroshima, yes.
Exactly. Very
upset. It's just one electron from one hydrogen atom.
Yeah.
Because the godliness down here is the same godliness wherever up there might be. You could take it. Because all aspects of place, no matter what entity of place we're talking about, is nullified to the infiniteness of Hashem, Hamis Labish Bai, which is enclosed in that entity of place, Al Yedei Midas Malchusoy Om Yuchedis Bai Yisborach, through Hashem's attribute of Malchus, which is united ultimately with Him. Rakshem Midas Malchusoy Hu Midas Hatzimtzum VeHester. What is Malchus doing? Malchus is concealing and covering over and containing the infiniteness of Hashem. Like, example, how many fractions are there between 0 and 1, but you still really only have one thing? Because what does Malchus do? Okay, so the infiniteness maintains its integrity. It's still infinite. There's still infinite godliness enclosed in the world. But because of the attribute of Malchus, we get edges, we get ends, we get limits, and those limits are concrete.
Yeah, okay, right.
And the godliness that is enlivening this second is not the godliness that's enlivening that second.
Yeah.
It's each second has its own little bit of godliness enlivening it.
Hence the true finiteness of the thing.
Correct. Because the godliness only goes up to this much.
The true evidence of the finiteness.
Exactly.
Right.
Because the godliness is limited within that organism. Right. As it says, if it wouldn't be this way, then we wouldn't have any time or place down here.
That's true.
Is that the end of a paragraph in English?
Close.
Where's the? Let me get to the paragraph. V'hinei k'moshikas of you, v'mashikas of yuvin, v'hinei k'moshikas of yuvin, mashikas of ani Hashem lo shenisi. That which we've been talking about, mashim avur. That which has been explained, will understand the pasuk that says, "I Hashem have not changed." Which is a very difficult pasuk for us to understand, because we have these rules of physics that, like, no two things can occupy the same place.
Right.
Something has to displace something else. So if there was nothing here but Hashem before, and now I am existing, must be that I am displacing Elokus.
Yeah, that.
And therefore there must be a change in God.
See, that absolutely does. It works exactly the opposite with Hashem. Marvelous, the opposite, because Hashem.
Hashem. But we have this verse that says, I, Hashem, right, have not changed.
Exactly. That's my point.
Meaning to say,
yeah,
that
exactly,
the, now that we understand it,
right,
that every finite organism contains the infiniteness to a certain point, making it finite.
Right.
So the infinite, so Hashem hasn't changed.
Correct.
There's no change at all to Hashem, even when we do exist. Remember, to say this in the first six chapters is duh, since it is that what's matter. Matter is nothing more than Elokus. So you can say, of course, Ani Hashem lo shenisi.
Yeah.
But now that you're saying, I have an existence, now there's a chiddush, Ani Hashem lo shenisi, I'm Hashem who didn't change.
Yeah, you can stop there. Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Hang on a second. First of all, Alex is finished.